From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine on New York State government and politics. Your host is Dave Gallitli, with commentary by political scientist Dr. Alan Shartok.
Hello, and welcome to the Legislative Gazette. I'm Dave Gallitli. Coming up this week, the threat became reality as two major financial analysts lowered New York State's credit rating, a move that will cost taxpayers millions more in interest payments. We'll have reaction from top state officials. Also, celebrities descended upon the state capitol again this week. Recently, Tony Randall and Colleen Dewhurst were among notables lobbying for arts funding. Another group came to town this week. They're concerned about environmental issues. We'll have that story, and our political analyst, Dr. Alan Shartok, and New York Post investigative editor Fred Dicker will discuss hot dogs in the budget. All that and lots more on this week's Legislative Gazette. There's more bad economic news for New York State. Two of Wall Street's leading rating firms lowered the state's credit rating. As we've told you before on this program, a black cloud has been hanging over the state since Standard & Poor's issued a credit watch for New York a few weeks back. This week, the credit rating was indeed dropped to its lowest level ever. And as Brian Shields reports, there are varying reactions to the news.
As expected, legislative leaders and Governor Cuomo expressed disappointment over the news that Standard & Poor's and Moody's Investors dropped New York's long- and short-term credit ratings. The lowered ratings will cost taxpayers at least an additional $10 million in interest payments. One day after the bad news, Governor Cuomo said things could actually be worse.
That was regrettable news, and it was avoidable, frankly, and I'm sorry about that. I think if we had moved a little more swiftly, we could have avoided that. But much, much worse than that would be a failure to move promptly and in a timely fashion now. I must tell you, one of the most chilling things I've heard since the announcement of the rating was that some Senate Republicans were rumored, and I confronted Senator Marino with this, to have said that now that the ratings went down, they didn't have to worry about doing the budget on time. Now that, if that was said, and I use these words to Senator Marino, that would have to be either one of the most stupid or irresponsible statements ever taken by an elected official. If we don't do this budget right, we could make this state a junk bond state.
Cuomo and legislative leaders spent many hours this week in budget negotiations attempting to close the estimated $1.5 billion budget gap. According to the governor, the best way to improve the state's credit rating is by meeting the April 1st budget deadline. He also says he was pleased that the raters' action forced Senate Majority Leader Ralph Marino to, for the first time, acknowledge the deficit. He also says he's pleased that Marino says he will support an increase in taxes, although only as a last resort. Meanwhile, again, a day after the news, Marino proposed a mandatory spending gap. Cuomo has repeatedly done so, but those attempts have routinely been rejected by legislative leaders. Senator Marino says a cap is now needed and contends his plan is even tougher than the governor's.
I'm pleased to announce a spending cap proposal today in response to the downgrading of our credit by Standard & Poor's. It seems to me the time is now to reverse ourselves in this state and to start down the road to financial stability. Our spending cap would limit spending growth for this fiscal year to 4.8%, less any federal grants and general obligation bonds.
Senate Majority Leader Ralph Marino. The Standard & Poor's move reduces New York's long-term credit rating from AA- to A, two notches on the rating scale. That's lower than the one New York had during the fiscal crisis of the mid-70s, which almost drove the state and New York City to bankruptcy. Assemblyman Oliver Capel, a Bronx Democrat, is a member of the Ways and Means Committee. We asked him what the raters need to see and believe in order to improve the credit rating.
I don't think that they're going to increase the bond rating instantly, even if we come to a conclusion on the budget. They're going to want to wait and see. I also think it depends to some degree on how we balance the budget, because the rating agencies are very nervous about gimmicks being used to balance the budget, because they see that those gimmicks in a year or two result in a worse problem than the one that we're facing now. They need to see action on the part of the state, which assures them that our budget is in true balance and that we're not just building up obligations for the future, sort of in the way that the city of New York did in the late 60s and early 70s. You had a gradual erosion of the ability of the city to repay debt because every year you were adding to the accumulated deficit, and all of a sudden the spigot was shut off and the lenders would no longer lend to the city, and the city virtually went into bankruptcy. Now, while it seems hard to imagine that happening on a state level, the credit agencies are concerned that we're moving in that direction. So they're going to look, number one, to a budget, a balanced budget, but they're also going to look to the way that the budget is balanced. And if it's balanced by one-shot revenues and financial gimmickry, that will make it very difficult to get back the kind of rating that we had before and be able to sell the bonds for the very lowest interest cost.
New York State Assemblyman Oliver Capel, a member of the Ways and Means Committee. State Republican Controller Ned Regan, meanwhile, says he's warned the governor and lawmakers in the past to end their spendthrift ways. He says the Raiders' action is further indication this has to be done. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Brian Shields.
Responsibility, the budget, and hot dogs. It's an interesting combination, and that's what our political analyst, Dr. Alan Chartok, and New York Post investigative editor Fred Dicker spoke about this week.
Alan, you know, it's not been a funny week at the Capitol. It's a serious time, but everyone at the Capitol is talking about the former head of the state's narcotics division, the Division of Substance Abuse Services. He's outside. I saw him just a couple of minutes ago in front of the Capitol on State Street, and he's selling hot dogs. He calls himself the commissioner. He says, I've gone from being commissioner to commissioner, and at least some people from New York City probably get the reference there to the knish, which many hot dog stands sell.
Now, some people think that he did this because he was trying to make a point with Cuomo somehow, that Cuomo had let him down.
Alan, I think that's the case, and it's not by accident, in my judgment, that he timed his debut this week as the commissioner to the big Somos Uno conference that's going on at the Capitol when about 7,000 Latinos, many of whom looked at Julio Martinez when he was a state commissioner as a heroic figure, an inspirational figure, that he timed his debut as the commissioner for this event to further embarrass the governor. And indeed, you know, he's in sight of the governor. The governor looks out his window at the Capitol. He can apparently see his one-time commissioner hawking hot dogs by the roadside.
Now, what's the embarrassment?
Well, the embarrassment is, let's face it, that being a hot dog salesman, as respectable as one could argue it is also seen as a dramatic step down from
Freddie,
being at the
Freddie,
level of a commissioner.
But Freddie, what did Cuomo do to him to get embarrassed about?
That's the question. The answer is, if you believe Julio Martinez, that he was never offered the job that the governor and the governor's people claim they offered as a replacement job for him when he was pushed out of his job as the chief drug
let's talk about that for a second.
Commissioner of State.
The Furyk Commission comes out with a report. Apparently, Joe Spinelli, the governor's guy, was working on a report.
Yes.
And all of which said that Julio had not been a good guy about...
that he had steered millions of dollars in state contracts to his friends who didn't deliver the drug programs that were promised.
Okay, so now we got the governor says, well, okay, we won't fire him, we'll move him, and we'll move him to the addictions because he's a former addict, and apparently there's a lot of people who believe that former addicts are the only people who can run addiction programs. Okay, let's leave that aside for a second.
Yes.
He moves him over to the
corrections department,
where he's supposed to be in charge of addiction over there.
Yes.
But the papers and everybody else land on the governor and say, hey, governor, if you're going to fire him from one place, why not just be done with it and fire the guy if he did wrong? Now we see that the governor says, well, he accepted the job, but he decided on his own volition to move on, right? But he says, now, no, I never did to get that job, and the governor apparently owes me something. Is that sort of the tenor of it?
Yeah, I mean, clearly somebody's lying. The governor and his people have said that Martinez was not only offered this job at corrections, but was given some other opportunities. Julio Martinez says, no, 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 it's not the case. I was never treated the way they promised they were going to treat me.
Okay, but what's this all about? Is this all about Hispanic payoff? In other words, that there has to be a certain number of Hispanic jobs?
I think it's a matter of pride of one individual right now, Alan. The backdrop clearly is that Martinez, by the governor's own admission, I think perhaps on your show, has described Martinez as an important symbol to the Latino general community. But I don't think Martinez is doing much more than expressing his own regrets and sadness and probably anger over how he thinks he was treated. He doesn't think he was treated fairly. And this is one way, and we've seen the results of it. The fact that we're discussing it now is proof of it. This is a dramatic way for a guy to make a statement. I mean, this was a big story in the New York Times. It's a talk of people in political circles all around the state, and I dare say it's a bit of an embarrassment for the governor nationally.
Okay, yet the governor's people lined up to buy the hot dogs, Art Webb, Ramon Rodriguez.
Yes.
So I think that the governor's people, see, I don't agree with you. I think that Martinez doesn't look good in all this. I don't think it looks bad for the governor. Why is it such an embarrassment for him?
Because this guy was an important symbol by the governor's own admission to the Latino community. The governor claims they offered him something good to take care of him, keeping in mind that this is a guy who's accused of improperly having spent state money. So at the one hand, the governor is saying the guy was bad. On the other hand, he's saying I'm going to protect him. And then the third point is the guy steps out and says they didn't offer me anything at all.
Well, okay.
Within the Latino community, this guy, if you speak to him, and we've interviewed Latino lawmakers and quoted them by name, saying that this is a very sad time for Julio Martinez. He clearly feels he was not treated well by the governor.
And yet, my perception looking at it is good for the governor. He did what he should have done.
Well, what did he do, though? Did he offer him a job? Did he not offer him a job? Did he remove him properly or did he not remove him properly?
Freddie, let's assume what he did was to save him a little face and to move him along.
Well, if you have someone who's apparently guilty of the misuse of public money, why should there be any face saving at all?
Well,
I mean, why is it good to try to have it both ways?
Well, you know, you seem to be trying to have it both ways, Fred, if I can say so. In other words, by arguing that somehow that he has hurt the Latino community
On the contrary, he has taken a guy who was a very important symbol to the Latino community, and for whatever reason, depending on what happened, has the guy out hustling hot dogs in front of the Capitol.
Wait.
Everybody is yucking it up over it, saying, pity poor Julio Martinez.
Freddie, he hasn't got him down there. Martinez has got him doing it himself.
Yes,
that's
but
Martinez's
had he not been
thing.
Removed, as he not had he not been forced out as this top state drug czar or whatever he was the head of the Division of Substance Abuse Services, he wouldn't be hustling hot dogs today.
I don't agree with you. I think Cuomo did right, but let me ask you a question here. What about the budget? Because the budget's the biggest story right now. Martinez
sure
is fun, but the budget is the issue.
And the budget is no laughing matter, Alan. Nobody around here has seen anything like this in almost really a generation. Even the state comptroller says that this is worse than anything that happened to the state in the fiscal crisis of 1975 and 76, if you can believe that.
Okay, so what do we got here is that Standard & Poor's and Moody's are lowering the state's credit rating.
Yes.
The governor is saying, hey, this didn't have to happen if the Republicans had come along soon enough and had done this thing. But it's the governor's watch, I suppose.
No question. Plus, Standard & Poor's, in announcing its major degradation of the state's credit rating, we now rate with Puerto Rico in the nation. And the only two states that are now lower than New York in terms of the assessment of Wall Street as to our credit worthiness are Massachusetts, your home state, which is, we all know, is in desperate straits, and Louisiana, which is always troubled by corruption and other difficulties. In making their announcement, Alan, they didn't cite the Senate Republicans the way the governor did. In fact, they singled out everybody, and they said this has been a decision that's been coming over many years.
Well, everybody does include the Senate Republicans, Freddie.
Absolutely.
Okay.
But let me just, final point, they said that for the last several years, and I'm quoting now from their statement, the state has been running operating deficits, and they also said that the last couple of years the state has been increasingly using questionable practices, the so-called use of one-shot revenues to balance the budget, and they said that the overall picture just is not healthy when it comes to good budget making.
Okay, now the day after the Standard & Poor's and Moody's do their thing, along comes all the parties, and they begin to make a little sense out of the budget.
No question.
So you think that in effect by these two ratings agencies doing what they did, they put on the right kind of pressure?
Well, right or wrong, I'm not sure. I don't think it's going to make a difference in terms of the ratings. The state has been badly damaged. Governor Cuomo, in my judgment, has been badly damaged, Alan, for any kind of national aspirations. This makes him look very, very bad because, as you said, it's on his watch. All the politicians now are scrambling to avoid the negative editorials that are about to come out tomorrow, and the next day you're going to see them clobbered all around the state. So they're all saying now, oh, we're ready to do something. But frankly, I don't think they're much closer to having a budget by the 1st of April than they were a couple of days ago. I still see them a long, long way off from agreement.
New York Post investigative editor Fred Dicker speaking with our political analyst, Dr. Alan Chartok. Now here with a look at other happenings this week in state politics is Paul Rosenthal with the Legislative Notebook.
Hundreds of members of the AIDS activist group ACT UP rallied at the state capitol this week. Protesters marched and picketed outside Governor Cuomo's mansion, shouting, "Programs, not promises," and "Shame, shame, shame." One protester explained the concerns of the group.
The lack of health care. Health care is a human right, and the health care system in New York City and New York State is collapsing. Housing. There are 10,000 homeless PWAs in the state. Drug treatment on demand.
A day before this protest, demonstrators halted Senate operations for about 15 minutes. ACT UP members burst onto the floor of the Senate chamber with shouts and blasts from an air horn. Other protesters sent fake dollar bills and death certificates fluttering down from the public galleries. Edward Cleary, president of the New York State AFL-CIO this week, announced the results of a study on the state's pension system. He says the findings reveal some disturbing trends.
Starting with the assets of the funds, which total over $100 billion, taking a look at the assets of that fund growing every year step by step, but yet the cost to the state government has been dropping. And while it's gone from $1.3 billion in 1980, the cost to state government has gone down to $718 million in 1989. But the state has also been tapping the reserves of those funds to bail out its budget problems within the state. And at no time had they given any thought to supplementing the income from those people that are presently on pension.
The task force of public employee unions called for changes in the $100 billion New York State and New York City public employee pension funds. The labor group said a panel of trustees should be appointed to oversee the pension funds. Right now, it's the responsibility of State Controller Ned Regan. The union said two separate seven-member boards, one for state employees and one for police and fire retirees, should be established. New York State's top law enforcement official this week announced a multi-state agreement with a major auto manufacturer concerning disclosures in advertising. Attorney General Robert Abrams says General Motors has agreed to disclose more information to consumers about rebates.
Rebate advertising is designed by manufacturers to make consumers believe that they're getting a break on the purchase price, but that's far from the complete story. My office found that when rebates entail dealer participation, not just manufacturers offering a rebate, but dealer participation, the dealers virtually always recoup their contribution somewhere else in the price. And so what happens is that if, for example, there's a $2,000 rebate and there's $500 worth of dealer participation, the consumer believes that they're getting $2,000 off the regular price of the car, but in reality, they're only getting $1,500 off, because somewhere within the price negotiation, the dealer, being compelled to participate, adds $500 to the cost of the car. This agreement will ensure that customers get fuller, more accurate information about the effect of rebates, so that they'll be adequately armed for the negotiating process.
The agreement specifically says rebate advertising must disclose the actual amount that a dealer must contribute to each rebate. It also says it must state that dealer participation may or may not increase the consumer's cost. Maine, Pennsylvania, Illinois, and Kansas were also included in the agreement. What about parents' rights? That's what members of the New York State Right to Life Committee asked state officials this week. Group representatives were in Albany urging lawmakers and Governor Cuomo to approve parental consent legislation. Committee Legislative Director Barbara Federico says the bill requires the consent of one parent in order for a minor daughter to get an abortion. If the girl cannot obtain consent, she can then go to family court to convince a judge she is mature enough to make that decision. Governor Cuomo is pro-choice and has consistently supported Medicaid funding for poor women's abortions, but Federico says he may be more flexible on this particular issue.
Well, I think he has indicated on numerous occasions that of all the abortion-related issues, this is the one that I think he finds most trying. As a parent himself, he certainly does not want to give away his ability and responsibility as a parent. And this particular legislation does involve the parent with the child in a very critical time period in that child's life. The option is still open for the parent to choose abortion for the child if that is what they deem in the child's best interest. But on the other hand, it's very positive, productive legislation. Where it has been enacted in other states, the rate of teenage pregnancy has actually fallen. Not just the abortion rate or the birth rate, but the actual rate of teenage pregnancy has actually fallen in those states that have passed this kind of legislation. And I think everybody sees that as a positive step in the right direction.
Barbara Federico, legislative director of the State Right to Life Committee. The state Senate this week unanimously approved Governor Cuomo's choice for the new chairman and seven other members of the State University of New York Board of Trustees. Frederick Salerno, chief executive officer of New York Telephone, takes over immediately as trustees chairman. School districts will be encouraged to provide daycare during summer vacations under a bill that received final legislative approval this week from the state Senate. The bill's sponsor is Republican State Senator James Donovan of Utica. Another bill, sponsored by Westchester County Republican Senator Mary Goodhue, would authorize the State Department of Economic Development to look for innovative child care options. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Paul Rosenthal.
Recently on the Gazette, we told you about a group of celebrities, including Colleen Dewhurst and Tony Randall, who came to Albany to lobby lawmakers over arts funding. More notables journeyed to the Capitol this week. As Bruce Robertson reports, environmental issues were the focus this time.
A delegation from the Creative Coalition visited Albany this week to conduct a very special kind of lobbying at the state capitol. The New York City-based group, known as TCC, was founded to give people in the arts a particular voice and power in government. Its president, movie actor Ron Silver, says the group, comprised largely of celebrities, has a special mission precisely because of its notoriety. In fact, Silver sees this mission as more of a moral obligation.
The reason we're up here is because we've realized recently that the federal government has withdrawn from issues of concern to the citizens in this country, and they've more or less thrown it back to the states. And the states are in the position now to make very, very important political decisions affecting people's lives intimately. So we're here because the action is in the states. We're involved in pro-choice activities, and the action on pro-choice is in the states, legislatures now, and we're here on the environment. Also, I want to say that we're here for the long term. We're interested in the process. We're not coming up for a quick hit. We're not coming up to meet with the governor, say what we have to say about four or five pending bills, and then get out of here. This is an introduction for some members of our community to politics Albany style. It's for us to learn and to become intimately involved in the process.
Silver and a group including Christopher Reeve, Susan Sarandon, and Alec Baldwin held a press conference to announce their long-range plan. Says Silver,
we are up here to let people know who is voting which way, why they are voting that way, and we expect to hold people accountable for their votes.
There are several major bills pending in the New York State Legislature this year concerning environmental affairs, three having to do with education and the environment. Assembly Bills 9039 through 9041 and the Senate versions of 6690 through 6692 would beef up the educational curriculum in the state schools, providing for adequate resources both to be identified and developed, and furthermore to require that a candidate for a teaching certificate show that he or she has completed a minimum of 3 semester hours of environmental or ecological sciences. Actor Alec Baldwin.
I think that it starts with education, everything does. I think that a kid who walks down the street and opens a candy bar and throws a candy wrapper on the street, he's going to be taught what a mistake he's making. And to stick your candy wrapper in your pocket until you find an appropriate receptacle for it is the beginnings of a lifetime of commitment to environmental conservation. That simple. That simple. Then from there we get into automobile emissions. We start teaching them at different levels. I'm talking about an environmental education program for all grade levels. We're talking about kindergarten kids learning about candy wrappers and disposing of waste, to moving on to land management issues for people in high school, for solid waste, things like that, and recycling, most important of all.
Contained in both the Assembly and the Senate bills is a call for more money. Money that Baldwin sees as more important this time than in any other standard request for funding.
I know about the response to this this issue that school teachers are already burdened with a very dense curriculum, and that resources are very, very limited in the state of New York for education, and there are those who say that we do not have the money available to designate resources for the instruction of environmental education. I think the debate about resources is really insignificant. Environmental concerns in the state of New York and around this country have leapfrogged to the forefront. And passage of these bills really can be construed as a preemptive strike, if you will, toward further environmental damage. And any money spent on the environment, especially environmental education, is an investment in our future.
Jennifer Beals, also with TCC, says that education is not just for the youth. We all stand in need of a rethinking of who and what we are.
As far as I can see, we can no longer pretend that man exists separate from his environment, separate from his surroundings. And the starting point to effectuate behavioral change in an individual is education.
All of the delegates of TCC in Albany this week are prepared to use their celebrity status to gain attention in the media. And once they have that airtime, then they can speak about their message, something that is not as easy for you and me. Christopher Reeve, perhaps, sums up why this is the time to be doing this work in just precisely this way.
Many people talk about the not-in-my-backyard syndrome. Well, I think it's our front yard. And I'm here to say that we have to deal with what's in our front yard, accept what's in our front yard, make changes where necessary, but get involved and not pass things on to somebody else.
Silver says that this group will not just make its presentation and then disappear. He says they plan to work year-round to get the information out to the voters, to let people know about the voting records, to let people know about the amendments, to let people know about the implications of the legislative proceedings. And he says TCC will follow a bill right through to the end, right up to and through the popular vote on the various referenda. This is Bruce Robertson.
Our political analyst, Dr. Alan Chartok, as is his custom, spoke with Governor Mario Cuomo again this week, trying to catch up on a number of topics as quickly as possible.
Fast track now. Did you buy a hot dog yet from your ex-commissioner, Julio Martinez, who's selling them down on the street?
No, but it would be a pleasure to, and I'd like it with a little broccoli.
Little broccoli. David Dinkins, the mayor of New York, interested in getting help by getting the legislature and his governor to say, all right, raise your own money down there. For example, he wants to put 8 cents more on a gallon of gas, I understand.
If you can't give the people the money they desperately need, I think at least you ought to give them the dignity of allowing them to raise their own taxes. Now, of course, you have that in this state. Local governments have the right to raise real estate taxes, so there's nothing. They raise their own revenues. The city of New York is simply asking for an expansion of authority to raise its own revenues, not to take money from the rest of the state, but to raise it.
But if they put an 8 cent tax on gasoline last week, you were saying let's get in there before the feds do. Isn't that a case where the city gets in there before the state does?
Absolutely. But so what? The state is saying no to a gas tax.
Oh, I see.
Mel Miller and Ralph Marino are both saying no.
Okay. Earth Day, April 22nd. How important is Earth Day?
Extremely important. A reminder of the environment.
That's it?
Without which we cannot live. Wait a minute, there are people picketing. I just wanted to hear what they're saying.
Hmm.
I can't hear it, sorry.
They're picketing outside your window?
Yeah.
Well, all right. The Oscars.
Yeah.
Well, did you watch him? Did you stay up till 12 o'clock at night?
No, we've been up until 3 o'clock every morning this week. We've had meetings until after midnight every morning.
Did you see Driving Miss Daisy?
No.
You've not seen that? It's a wonderful film.
I'm told, yes, and I saw little clips of Mr. Freeman and Jessica Tandy, and they both looked great.
And that about does it for this week. The Legislative Gazette is produced by Inga Sarda, with technical assistance from Bob Banks. The program is made possible with grants from the Legislative Gazette, the newspaper about state government. Subscription information available at 518-473-6482. And Empire Information Services, serving New York and New England with electronic news release distribution. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Gallettly.